Okay, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
There's certainly a lot of people here. I thought there'd be like four. Anyway, my name is Stephanie, or Steep. Steep is the nickname Geshe-la gave me a long time ago, which I'll tell you a little bit about that later. But why don't we get started with prayers, and thank you so much for leading them.
So if you'll please turn to 183 in the Gold Prayer Book. 183, we'll chant the Shakyamuni Buddhist Mantra. If you don't have the Gold Prayer Book, if you have a white binder, it's on the first page. It says Kadampa Center Prayers, Shakyamuni Buddhist Mantra. Tayata omne mne mamunaye soha Tayata omne mne mamunaye soha Turn to page 34 in the Gold Prayer Book. Let's read the Four Immeasurables in English. And so instead of chanting in Tibetan later, I thought we could say it three times, so sort of as a meditation. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the cause of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Now turn to page 37, and at the bottom you see two mantras, Chenrezig's mantra and Green Taurus mantra. So Chenrezig is the Buddha of great and universal compassion, and Green Tara is the deity of enlightened activity. So let's say Chenrezig's mantra eight times, and then Green Tara's seven times.
Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha, 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.
Okay, the children are welcome to go to their classes. Thank you.
So today you're going to have a huge chance to practice compassion with me. And today is also a holy day. Does anybody know what holy day this is in the Buddhist calendar? We can talk a little bit about it because our holy day director is not here today. So do you want to tell everybody and describe to everybody? Some of you may have taken precepts this morning, and some of you may be coming back in the afternoon to do some chanting. So anybody would like to tell a little bit about what the holiday is? Come on. Come on. Just tell us, how do you pronounce it?
Oh, okay.
Start with that. I implore you.
It's Labab Duchen.
Okay, Labab Duchen.
Yeah.
And what exactly is it?
It's the Buddhist descent from the God realm of the 33.
Thank you. And he went to the God realm of the 33 because that's where his mother had gone after her passing. So he went there to teach her. And so when I was thinking about this today and what I am trying to say to people, I was thinking about in the afternoon we're going to be doing this recitation. And if we can actually find the loose copy of the Golden Light Sutra, we're going to do a mass recitation here today like people are going to do in the afternoon. And it looks like we found it, right? Okay, thank you so much. So we'll be doing that in a little bit. Thank you. But in order to get there, I started thinking about words. And probably you've heard a lot of people say in the last year, words matter. And that's when the Buddha went to the Holy Land, to the celestial realm, to teach his mother. Most likely, there was language involved. You know, there might have been there's always other ways of teaching. You know, we can look at things and gain teaching from other people's mistakes and experiences around us. But a lot of times the teachings that we're receiving are through language, written or spoken at some point. So I really started thinking a lot about words and how words matter and why they matter and all the ways that they matter. And how even when we say things like, I'm speechless, we're using words, or I have no idea what to say, we're saying something. So just how important words are. And I am a person who uses words all day long in my job as a mediator. So this became particularly important to me in this week of thinking about this. And then even thinking about the 10 non-virtuous actions, and that 4 of them are related to speech. So 4 out of 10 of them are related to speech. And I don't know if any of you remember, I don't want to do a pop quiz, but you know, the first one is lying. Is considered non-virtuous speech, and then harsh speech. And of course, we've all been guilty of all of these many times, but it's just good to kind of go over them. Divisive speech and idle speech. And so then, you know, there's the opposites of those. Well, the virtuous speech is, you know, telling the truth, not speaking harshly, you know, kind of keeping that in check and finding a different way to say something. What's the opposite then of divisive speech would be some kind of speech unifying and bringing people together. And then idle speech, it's really more about being mindful and having intent into what we say. Even when we're saying something that we, a prayer or something without putting our mind into it can become idle. So making sure our speech is meaningful, is full of intent and purposeful. And then the other thing that I really think is pretty powerful about speech is when we think of the three gates of how we move and live and act in the world and the ways that we create karma, you know, our body, our speech, and our mind. And our speech to me, and I may be wrong about this, but it seems like it involves all three because we're having to use our body, we're certainly using our mind, and we're using our speech. So again, I think of how important speech is, how just amazing it is in the ways that we communicate and can create virtue. I saw this thing on YouTube where this man was begging for money, and he had a sign there that said, "Please help me, I'm blind." And some of you may have seen this. And people walked by and gave a nickel here, a penny there, and just kept on walking. And then some young woman came and she changed his sign, and he couldn't see what it was. She wrote different words on there, and all of a sudden he started getting all this money. And at the end of the day, you know, he could hear her particular footsteps, and he had felt her shoes. So he recognized when she came back up at the end of the day, and he said, "You know, what did you do?" And she said, "It's the same. I just changed the words." And what she had written was, "It's a beautiful day, and I can't see it." And that's what then brought in all this outpouring of money and love and compassion and empathy. And so, you know, again, in my job, what I'm doing is I'm listening to this argument and then trying to find, what are these people really trying to say to each other? How can I rearrange these words so they can actually hear each other and try to start working on some solution rather than what they're doing, which is not hearing, because of what the way that they're often saying it, it's not being received. So then, I'm going to get a tissue while I talk. Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you, thank you. So then I was thinking a little bit more, thank you, about my history, my particular history with words, which is that I was always fascinated with words. When my mother would scold me, she would use all kinds of words. I had no idea what she was saying, you know, and I was like, well, what does this mean? And what does that mean? She'd say, go get the dictionary. So this is my punishment. I have to lug out this monster dictionary onto the table and then look up all the words that she was saying. And I would just totally lose her point because I would get really fascinated with, like, how these, what the root word was and where it came from. France, and this means that. And I forget what her point was. But I really started to love words and love the roots of words. And so here's an example, because I still play with the dictionary a lot. In my dictionary, which I'm sure is a lot older than the modern ones and certainly not what's on the Internet, but it's a standard Merriam-Webster dictionary. If you look up the word spell, S-P-E-L, the very first definition of that is from Middle English, and it comes from an old word meaning talk or tale. But the definition is a spoken word or form of words held to have magic power, incantation. The very last definition is to name the letters, print the letters, etc. I thought, wow, okay, well, we all know, you know, he cast a spell, but that, I mean, that's the very first definition of the word spell, which just blows my mind. So I want to come back to this theme of the roots of words and the power of words. And so in order to give myself a break, I found a really cool video to play for you all. It's a TED Talk. You know, it's about 15 minutes, I think. So we'll watch that, and then we'll come back and kind of relate it to the topic and reciting texts and mantras. So I like that. I like that. And it's also, just like the word that he talked about is such an ancient word. It's not something he just created. The whole idea is not something he just created. We're kind of coming back to some of those things, but these practices, you know, obviously when we look at Buddhism, it's doing the exact same thing that he's talking about, rewiring the brain, that what you hear or what you're thinking and what you're saying, he was talking about is coming out through his hands into his life. And when he was making that mistake with his magic trick over and over because of what he was saying and believing and then it was manifesting out in his world. So these are ideas that we can look back and see, oh, that's what was going on. That's what's going on when people say meditate on this seed syllable. I remember thinking, what in the world is a seed syllable? And does it have to look like that? Or is it, you know, what is a seed syllable? So it's a complicated answer to that, but it's basically a lot of what he was saying. And so, how many of you have done kind of meditations or said mantras? You know, you're thinking about those different syllables, om, ah, hum. You hear about visualizing them in different places of your body. Does that sound ring a bell for people? Okay, so it's a lot of what he just said, how sound and words can rewire your system. I mean, even if we don't take words and seed syllables, we know this from music. You know, we know that musicians create a kind of energy from their song. We know that, I remember after 9/11, they picked this one adagio to play during this whole kind of memorial service to get people in that, to bring people together through that sound. So then one of the classic meditations on a syllable is first meditating on whatever your awareness of emptiness is. You know, just really briefly, you know, not that it's empty of everything, not that there's nothing, but it's empty of things just existing by themselves, that everything comes into being based on something else. And so then what you're trying to manifest and create is based on that seed syllable that's jam-packed with all, say, for example, Manjushri, seed syllable, jam-packed with all the wisdom of all the Buddhas packed into that little syllable. And then you're meditating on it. In one meditation, it could be dissolving into your tongue, so that now you're able to speak with as much wisdom and compassion as a Buddha. So it's again, a rewiring of the brain through words, through sound. This is not a new concept. What is it in the Bible? You know, I didn't go to any Sunday school, but I do know that in the beginning was the Word. I mean, these are things that are just steeped around us all the time, right? So, does someone have their hand up? Any thoughts or questions about this whole topic of words and sounds? Because what we're going to be doing is reading all of this text together in a minute, and it's going to sound just like the whole room full of people talking about something that you can't really hear. We're all going to be saying this at the same time. This is a really classic way of us changing our mind stream, our neurological system, creating this incredible karmic wealth by chanting something together, by reading something together. And instead of reading the entire thing by yourself, a whole room full of people will take different pages and read it in unison. So we'll get there in a minute. But I remember somebody asking me, like, well, I don't really see how that's powerful. And, yeah, I don't know, just one more second. And I said, okay, well, you know, people travel long distances to go and sit in the chair where Teddy Roosevelt sat, or to go and walk around this circle where Martin Luther King walked, or to do any of those things. You know, we don't think that something's just going to fall into us, but we kind of join that same energy by doing it, by having the awareness that this person sat at this desk and wrote this thing, or those are the words of the Constitution and I'm looking at them. How amazing is that? That's the same kind of idea of, I am now reading the words that Buddha wrote. It's like walking in those same footsteps, saying those same words, even if I don't hear every single word, I am now, this room together is now going to say them all in unison. It's that kind of power and energy. Don?
For example, like the Buddha statue is a good example. Like, which comes first? I mean, on a very raw level, my visual consciousness is making, I mean, and then there's something subtle there, mm-hmm. and then my name, and then the label, Buddha statue, or, you know, Shakyamuni Buddha statue, is there, and it's like, it's almost like, which is first, the label, or this subtle, you know, of course we can't find a Buddha statue. It's a concept, it's a label, but it's almost like, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Which comes first, the object or the label? And I don't really know the answer to that yet. I'm thinking about it, but I was wondering what your thoughts are.
Oh, well, we know that they don't exist without each other.
Yeah.
That's always the conclusion I come back to. You know, which is first? There's no first, but they can't exist independently of each other. And I was just listening to this talk about seed syllables and how which comes first in that kind of meditation. And the sound could come first, and then from the sound, the form of the syllable comes, and then from the form of the syllable, the Buddha that you're meditating on comes. And so that kind of progression through a meditation. But in terms of which can you separate, you know, label and object, from everything I've talked to Geshe-la about, no. You know, they're not the same, but you can't separate them. Yeah.
There's a meditation emptiness by Lama Zompa Rinpoche, and he gives the example of, you know, first seeing a car and then labeling it. So he said that first you see the form and then you label it. So the form comes first and then the label, according to Rinpoche, on that meditation on emptiness.
So, you know, if you've done the meditation where some of you, and you don't have to do it in Tibetan. You can do it in, you know, Roman letters of Om, Ah, Om. So what I like about, you know, this video that we just watched is this very practical, and we can all understand this idea of what you say is what you get, and the idea of affirmations, right? This is just the exact same thing, meditating on a syllable, but you have to know what the syllable means. You know, Om, Ah, Om, and that you are joining your centers, your neurological system to this highly evolved, highest of the highest neurological system. That's what that whole meditation is trying to do through words, through sound, through syllables. And we can talk about that more later if you want, but it's that same concept of joining something. You're trying to join something to something higher, just as he was doing, trying to get into that society of magicians, right? He wanted to get up there, and so he had to use some of his thoughts and thinking and change his words to be able to do that. And now we're talking about a much, much, much higher leap. And so that's how thoughts and sounds and words can actually help us get there. It's a psychological process, because that's what we're trying to change. It's our psychology. So think about something, even just practically, that you would like to change in terms of the way that you, your inner dialogue, your outer dialogue, something that you think if you change the words on that, it might actually help. Whether it's even just the way you greet somebody at work who really gets on your nerves, just something really practical that you could start to do this week in ways that you say something. And again, I wish I could give you more examples that aren't so extreme, but I see the extreme version all the time of something somebody's trying to say, but they say it with such an edge and such a kind of threat that nobody can really hear what's underneath it. And then my job is to translate that and say, oh, so what you're saying is this. Yes. Oh, I can do that. So is there anything that you, even if you could translate it for somebody else who's saying something to you in that way? So just take a minute to think about what you would try to do this week to change your mundane language on the one hand. And that's, you know, us running around the busy world trying to remember to do that. And then on a higher level, what you can do in your practice, you know, what are you doing in your practice? What can you do in your practice using these words, using mantras, using another kind of affirmations? You know, I have right by my bed one of the quotes of His Holiness saying, you know, every morning when I wake up, I want to remember how lucky I am to have woken up, and that I am a human being, and that may I expand my mind as far as I possibly can to be as kind as I possibly can this day. That kind of power, to see that every morning is your first thought, and then really try to do it. So think about something on that level as well that you can try to put into practice this week. And I'm giving you homework, right? Okay, so any other thoughts or questions or comments? Because what we're going to do soon is this recitation. It seems like there's something else I was going to tell you about it. I remember the first time I did this, I was just kind of blown away. I didn't expect to feel such kind of joy when I was doing it. That wasn't what I was expecting at all. In fact, we did it in this building before we'd even created these walls. You know, we had bought this building. It used to be a fish pet store, and we had all that was cleaned out, and we were painting and putting the ceiling in, and several of us, Chris, you were one of them, I remember you, we got together in the corner by the window, and we recited the Golden Light Sutra just to kind of try to bring that energy in. There'd been plenty of talk of fish, so we needed to have some other talk going on in here, and it took us probably 15, 20 minutes, and I remember just being blown away with how I felt when I was reading it. So it may surprise you. Don't worry too much if the page you get doesn't make a whole lot of sense. There's some pages in there that are like, what is this? Well, the point is that every syllable in the text be pronounced today. And there's other time for you to go back and try to read it and make sense of things. But today the whole point is that each syllable of this text is spoken together, and we kind of form one tongue, one mouth, one body speaking this text on an amazingly holy day. So what I'm going to do is, I don't know the best way to do this. It doesn't matter what sequence, so I can just divide it up into threes and pass it. Thank you. Just take, maybe take, yeah, thank you.
There's 104 pages.
Okay, so take two sheets, and we'll bring the rest back up. Yes, two sheets each, and pass it to the next person.
I'll give you the header page. Is that okay?
Yeah, I can take more. And so, you know, by the way, this is how a lot of texts are chanted in the monasteries as well, in this kind of group recitation, or, you know, they have a whole system of doing it that we don't exactly have down pat yet. But this is the next best thing. It's the same concept, that everything is being said at the same time together. And so all of us are going to be reaping the benefits of doing that, and so while the pages are being sent out, let's take a minute to kind of set our intention for this practice. Does everybody have a page? Oh, he needs a page. Oh, well, we don't have any more. Okay, those of you who have two pages, there's some people who didn't get any. I thought. Okay, I'll take one. Thank you. So take a minute to set your intention. And for those of you who haven't done that very much, let me just think about why you came here today. You know, even on a very mundane level, if it was just to connect with other like-minded people, to feel support in a difficult time, whatever your reason for coming here today, take a minute to think about that. And then think about if you achieved that, if your point in coming here today was to feel support and connection and camaraderie with other like-minded people, what would happen in your mind stream if you reached that? And how much better you would be, and how much better those around you would be if you reached that goal. And in this way, we try to kind of amplify what may have been a very kind of mundane intention of getting here today as high as we possibly can. Because again, the point is to try to join our mind stream with the highest possible mind stream ever. And having confidence that by creating positive seeds, we will do that. Okay, so a one and a two. Two more pages. Anybody want?
I'll take that.
Okay, so we just read, and then we want to read out loud. Everybody just read, and make sure you just pronounce every syllable. And then at the end, you know, there'll still be other people reading out loud. You can just sit quietly and meditate. Okay, and begin.
Always in downward virtues, following me. Here and now, in all three realms, so I may free from all beings from an ocean of suffering, and offer peace and happiness that I will see for eon and future times. I shall always engage in enlightenment, however many words exist in the three realms, just as their words are impeccably distinguished, through the virtue of the God birth and the merit of the human spirit, and with my Buddha field likewise be so. Chapter 6, then at the time of Tathagata God the Lord appears, and numerous other inconceivable and desires confounded empty phenomena in detail. Hence here in this brief scripture, empty phenomena are just briefly explained. As beings of slight intelligence, ignorant and capable of knowing all things, and here in the supreme sublime Yoga Sutra, empty phenomena are explained by the so that all beings may certainly know that they may be delivered from the vibration of the through compassionate ways and possessions of other means. I have expounded the supreme sublime Yoga. The body is like an empty house or village. Senses are like soldiers and seers. Although they live in the same village, they are unaware of each other. Eye sense runs, has a form, the ear sense indulges in sound. The nose sense captures numerous smells. The tongue sense always hunts the body sense pursues tactile sensations, and the mental sense grasps at all phenomena. These six individual senses are each absorbed in their object. The mind is conditioned as an object. The sense of Sterling grows like a man who burns to an empty village and resides there among the soldiers and beasts. The mind dwells in the fixed object and fully knows the object for the fixed. Therefore, the mind resides in the fixed object and fully knows the object since in the fixed object. Forms, sounds, and tactile smells, taste, tactile smells. The mind in motion is like flight of a bird, and all six encounter enters the sense faculty, whatever sense it arises, lends that sense to its knowing nature. The body, like a machine in an empty village, is without motion and completely without action, lacking core essence and arises from the condition, arising from context which lacks inherent nature. Earth, wind, water, fire, fighting separately in different parts, like deadly snakes in the same den, forever in conflict with each other. And these four snakes, the elements, two move up and two move down, moving by tools in directions and sub-directions. These snakes, the elements, surely will perish. The earth snake and the water snake perish down below. The fire snake and the wind snake ascend into space above. Venerable Translucent Victor, we, along with the 28 great generals and instructions and numerous hundreds of thousands of instructions teams, will always watch over, guard, and protect the whole Delta, our divine eye, which is pure and capacity of human. Venerable Transcendent Victor, for this reason, we, the four kings, are known by the name World Protectors. Venerable Transcendent Victor, whatever regions of this downward world is overrun by the armies, afflicted with famine and disease, and acutely opposed by hundreds of different arms, hundreds of arms, and hundreds of thousands of arms. Venerable Transcendent Victor, we the four kings will give support to the devout monks who keep the King of Glorious Sutras, the sublime golden light. Venerable Transcendent Victor, when devout monks, upon receiving enlightenment from us, four great kings, their magic power and blessing, travel to those regions and proclaim perpetually the King of Glorious Sutras, the sublime golden light, hundreds of times and thousands of times occurring disease to those regions will see. Venerable Transcendent Victor, whatever kings, humans, the divine monks who hold the King of Glorious Sutras, the sublime golden light, visit those very regions will be visited by the King of Glorious Sutras, the sublime golden light. Venerable Transcendent Victor, should a king of humans listen to King of Glorious Sutras, the sublime golden light, and having listened, should he then give protection, give refuge, care, and for the same of for all their enemies, then Venerable Transcendent Victor, we the four kings will protect, give refuge, care for, save, and give peace and well-being to the beings living in the entire country to that king of humans. Venerable Transcendent Victor, to the King of Humans, Upabhushas, Bhakshunis, Upasakas, and Upasakas, to hold this King of Sutras, providing them with all productive resources. Then we, the four great kings, will ensure that all beings in the entire country of that King of Humans possesses excellent being and resources. Venerable Transcendent Victor, when a King of Humans respects, honors, and offers service to the Bhakshas, Bhakshinis, Upasakas, and Upasakas will hold the great sutra. Then, Venerable Transcendent Victor, we are the four kings whom we will greatly respect, greatly honor, greatly offer service, and greatly worship that King of Humans, who will praise him in all regions. Then the Tathagata congratulated the four kings. Excellent, excellent, O great kings. Excellent, excellent, you four great kings. It is like this. You have offered astonishing service to the Buddhas, produced roots of virtue, honored hundreds of thousands of millions of Buddhas, abided by the Dharma and professed the Dharma, and through the Dharma you have become kings and gods and humans. Thank you.
Click the mic.
On the on side. Okay. So one time Geshe-la had, somebody was over asking him some questions about the Om Mani Padme Hum mantra of compassion, and she said her daughter, who was probably about 6, had heard her reciting this, and so her daughter was reciting it as often as she could, but her daughter thought the mantra was, "Oh mommy, bring me home." And Geshe-la said, "Yeah, if she says that enough times, she'll find mommy and she'll find home." And I thought, that is perfect. And that's what it's all about, is that intention behind saying something over and over and over again. Now, it wasn't long after that I heard this story on NPR where this woman was, she was an actress, and she was talking about when she was in college, she had been given an assignment to take one of her, the favorite line of some play, I think something with Shakespeare, that she really liked, and to say it often and often, you know. So she went home, she took it very literally, and she stayed up half the night reciting this part of a Shakespeare play until she kind of hallucinated. She said she then felt like she saw Queen Elizabeth in her room. And I was like, yes. Now we think that's so, like, oh, yeah, that's kind of new agey. But these are the things that people have been doing by reciting mantras and going into retreats and doing, this is not such an unusual thing, is right? But it has a different reason and a different history when you're doing it with a mantra recitation as opposed to something just maybe 2 or 3 other people have done. If you're following this really well-worn path and these well-worn directions, you're going to go in this direction that you're aiming to go into. And the last thing was, I love, along with words, I really love names. And what seems to me so interesting about Tibetan names is that they have a meaning that everybody knows. Like, it's like if a woman's name is Hope, that means hope. You know, her name is Joy. We have lots of names like that, mostly for women. I can't think of any for men that, you know, except Mark, but I don't even know if Mark means Mark. But for women, there's just countless names like that. You know, April, May, you know, all kinds of names for women like that. But a lot of people running around with their everyday names don't even know what it really means. You know, do you know what your name, actually the root of your name and where it comes from and what it means? But you would probably have to explain that to somebody else, saying your name. So I think that's why Geshe-la gave me the nickname he gave me. I thought he just kept mispronouncing my name because they don't have the PHF sound in Tibetan. So he kept calling me, I thought he was saying Steve, and I was like, I'm not Steve. He goes, "No, Steve, Steve." I said, "No, my name is not Steve." And he goes, "I know." And then he'd go back to calling me, I thought, Steve. And so finally I said, "You know my name? I'm not Steve." He goes, "No, I'm not saying Steve. I'm saying steep." He goes, "Like a steep hill, because you're going to go straight up." And I said, "Oh, well, steep also means straight down." So I said, "But I like that you say that, because that reminds me, it's kind of up to me which way it's going to go." So that's why I like that nickname. All right, so let's take a minute to dedicate all this incredible merit that you've created by getting here today, by putting up with me and being very patient, by reciting this entire text, by just setting your intention, you've created incredible karmic seeds. And now you have a choice as to where they're going to ripen. Left undirected, they'll ripen, but maybe not exactly how you want them to ripen. And so again, on this day, we're joining our energy and our mind streams and our intention on this day that's jam-packed. You know, we have the chance to elevate all of that incredibly because of the power of the energy that comes with this day, the power of the actions that we're taken on this day. Now we're joining our actions with those actions. And so you can think kind of on a more mundane, small level, the people around you, what you would like to see happen in your life, your family. And then on a bigger level, how you want this energy to ripen you can think, you can try like expanding it by first looking at your circle around you, the people you know, how you like them to be affected by this wealth of merit that will ripen, how you would like to see it expand to the people that you don't know, on other sides of the world, on other sides of town, on other sides of other realms that you never see. How would you like this to affect all beings? Because it's also the thought that counts. Okay, now I'm going to ask you to please read the lead us in the closing prayers.
Please turn to page 246 in the Gold Prayer Book. I believe it's on the back of the page in the white binder. We'll read Master Shantideva's dedication from Bodhikaryavatara, page 246. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind laid down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world.
Okay, thank you everyone.
Okay, just a few announcements. So all the chiefs are out of town, or out of the country, so we've been winging it today, so hopefully nobody noticed a thing. So Steve, before you leave, would you just raise your hand for a second? Steve Hale is going to do a newcomer orientation. So if you're new, or if you just want to know a little bit more about the center, is it just after or 12:15?
Right after.
Okay, so meet him in the back of the Gompa. And last night we did Tara practice, so there's extensive offerings. That's what this table's about. It's quite lovely. And we leave them up so that you can enjoy it, but we need help taking them down. So a lot of the people who do this are out of the country. So who knows how to do this and would head up a bunch of people who are going to come up and help you? Who knows how to take the offerings down, simply emptying the water, putting the flowers, and doing the rice? All those people, somebody knows how to do it. Lee, okay. Arlene and Lee, okay. So if you guys would just come up afterwards, and then anybody else who could help them. It's really easy. We just need a bunch of hands, and you get fruit to take home, too, so you get a good treat.
No experience necessary.
Yeah, no experience necessary. It's dumping some water, wiping some bowls, and dumping some fruit. All right, let's see. Yes. So at 1 o'clock, which sutra is that one, the Sangata Sutra or the Vajrakata Sutra? We're going to do the same thing you just saw, and so whoever wants to come back at 1 or stay, we're going to do another recitation because today's a holy day. Could you pronounce it? Lob Bob Duchin. Okay, I always say that funny. Lob Bob Duchin. So it's everything that you do is multiplied times 100 million, right? Yes? Okay, 100 million. So what you just did was amazing when you think about it. So if you want to come back and do another recitation, we'll be in here gathered. So with that 100 million, what's another amazing thing you could do with that? If you said, I love you, or thank you, or you look beautiful, or you do a great job, or... Yeah. Okay. 100 million times. So for leadership to be amazing, we can do that. Also, if you just thought about donating to the center, you knew where I was going, then you would be giving $100 million if you gave $1. And I personally want you to have that blessing. As a center manager, I really want you to have that blessing. So there's a little sign I put in the back of the Gompa about our new Thanksgiving, which is quite exciting. For me, it's exciting, I think. It's just fun to be able to go on and just try it out. You can give a minimum of three, so that's $300 million. And you simply type in KC108 to 73256, and then drop-down menu, you can pick what you'd like to give to, or you can just give to the general, Donna. And Don is going to make an announcement. Christy, are you in the building? We need Christy Batts to come forward. I know, but she knows about this. So she's, yeah, she knows, and she's going to hear her name and come walking in any minute. So we'll let Don go first, and then Christy's going to have an announcement. Thank you.
So thank you for abracadabra. Yeah, so abracadabra, you know, this coming Sunday, if we, those of us who do the Lum Rim retreat, who knows, we may all end up being Buddhas if we do the practice well. Anyway, just an announcement. Rinpoche, I mean, this whole center really revolves around the notion of bodhicitta, which is this desire to become enlightened in order to help others, sincerely wanting to help others, and the way to do that is to transform our mind, our heart. That doesn't just happen with a wish, just a wish. It takes a wish that needs to be reinforced by meditating on the stages of the path, and that's the long rim. Rinpoche, when those of you who went to the Light of the Path retreat, Rinpoche emphasized the importance of talking about this motivation before everything we do at Kadampa Center. And so there's a, in Buddhism we have this Lam Rim, these stages of the path to enlightenment. And we're going to meditate on this for 3 days. It'll be from 7 a.m., and not nonstop, of course. We'll have breaks, but we'll do meditations. There's about 20 to 22 different meditations to build up to having this whole experience of the Lam Rim. So it's an opportunity. We haven't done this, I don't think, in over a decade, maybe in 2 decades. We have not taken 3 days to really meditate on the whole Lam Rim. So this is going to happen Friday morning and Saturday and Sunday. There's no charge. The only thing we ask people to do, and you don't have to be a Buddhist either, by the way, we just ask people to come with a commitment to being 100% present, 100% participation for all 3 days, and then we'll just see what happens. Abracadabra. Could be amazing. It will be amazing. At the very least, we'll plant the seeds for enlightenment, and they will ripen at some point. So please, if you have the time and the wherewithal and the energy to be here and participate, we'd love to have you. And there's no pre-registration. You just show up with ready to go. There's a note on the website and there's been some emails posted and stuff like that. So just if you have your own meditation cushion and your malas and your blankets, you can bring all that stuff. Thank you. Right now? Oh yeah, the center's closed. And really, just bring your lunch, like a brown bag lunch, because we're not going to try to do, you know, potluck. It's just too crazy. And anyway, thank you. And I hope to see some of you there. Bless the leadership of our country. Om Mani Padme Hum. Yeah, we, you know, even people that we might not necessarily like are, you know, are suffering sentient beings, and they deserve our compassion, and they deserve our well wishes, and we're all interdependent. So, you know, we have a new president. A lot of people I know are not happy about this particular individual, but our karma is linked, at least for the next 4 years. So at the very least, sending him, you know, waves of love and compassion rather than anger and fear and hatred, which harms us, by the way, makes sense. So it might take a shift. We'll meditate on him, too, on Friday, on the weekend. He'll be part of all sentient beings that are suffering that we'll be working on. So, yes, in the back. It's almost there's so many books out there that talk about karma, and I mean at this retreat we have like two or three meditations about karma and the seeds, but you can think of them as potencies that are placed on the mind stream that ripen in the future. For example, the potencies that ripen in happiness are called virtue, and the potencies that ripen in suffering called non-virtue. So they're just seeds planted by body, speech, and mind that we're constantly planting. And this, you know, this center is about helping us plant the seeds that result in happiness and enlightenment.
And the other explanation I've also heard is that our deeds create habitual tendencies. So they're kind of like habits we create in our mind stream. So whatever deeds, if we do positive deeds today with our body, speech, and mind, then we're likely to create future habits of similar deeds. And of course, the opposite is also true. So positive deeds today, more positive deeds in the future, more happiness in the future. Negative deeds today, habit for negative deeds in the future, more suffering in the future.